to Free Fire Radio. And now, Free Fire Radio is about to commence.
Good morning, North State. Welcome to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning. 7:06 in the morning. Our phone lines here are 605-4567. We're streaming at KCNR1460.com. You can write to Linda. Linda at KCNR1460.com. And if you don't think we stream, ask the people in Paris, France. Ask the people in the Czech Republic. Ask the people in Red Bluff. Might be easier for Red Bluff. Hey, we're joined today, of course, by Bad Bob.
Well, good morning. What a beautiful morning, and going to get hot, but that's the way it is this time of year.
Well, yes. And speaking of hot, she's going to tell us how hot it's going to be.
Linda. I just love how the introductions happen every day. Yes, good morning. It's going to be 102 today, currently 62 degrees. I'm going to give you a couple things. I love it when I walk in and there's a buzz going on around the studio about, you know, this day in history. I just find it fascinating when we go back in this day in history. Want to let you know that, of course, who could ever forget on this day in history, Christopher Columbus set sail on the Santa Maria. And he was...
Olé!
I know. In 1492?
No, 1492.
1492. See, they cut the first two off. I'm testing you. The printer cut the first two letters off. The first two numbers off.
1492.
Okay, so guess
Columbus
what?
Columbus sailed the ocean.
Okay, that's what I thought. But I was just testing you.
You wait for me to say yes, 1892. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, the same time they invented electricity, right? Okay.
And in 1933, the world-famous Mickey Mouse watch was introduced.
Which, by the way, all politicians are issued once they hit Washington, D.C.
The original Mickey Mouse watch sold for $1.50. New models now sell for $25 or more. I wish I still had my original, but somebody ripped it off.
Well, probably your original is probably now worth $150,000, which is about what we pay our assembly people.
In 1954, a recorded divorce settlement for the first time was awarded to Mrs. Barbara Bobo Rockefeller.
Bobo.
Winthrop Rockefeller was ordered to pay a sum of $5,500,000. That was in 54. Well, not like 55 yeah. million or anything like that. But in 1963, the Beach Boys' Surfer Girl entered the Billboard Hot 100 chart. It became one of the biggest hits. Surfer Girl made it to number 7 in the hit music chart September 14th, 1963.
I'm talking Beach Boys, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I still have the best of the Beach Boys. It's in my playbook in the truck.
Yeah, we listened to it. We pulled it out the other day so we could listen to Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, well, we did that too.
Yeah. Oh, can't forget about the Macarena. That hit number 1 in the Billboard charts and stayed on the top for 14 smash weeks. Wish we could just download that real fast. The Macarena, 1996, that happened.
We'd be afraid to. Our new interns, our new board operator learners are in here. They may start doing it and dancing around
That's
the
cute.
Studio.
That's cute. We love that. We love the youthful energy. I have a question before we go to break.
Okay.
Didn't anybody know that when they put fish into the lake that there was going to be a temperature change?
Well, they did, and they expected some shock. I don't think they expected that much shock. And this is for we talk about the 200 or 300 fish that was found in Lake Shasta.
Isn't that a travesty?
Hang on just for a second here. Let's go to
we're
a break.
We're on the air. We're going to be right back. This is Carla Linda Bott.
We're on the break. Yeah.
Free
Hello. 1460, it's Carlo and the Bot. Good morning, it's 7:12 in the morning.
That's Macarena.
Yeah. Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, we had a Macarena here. I'm sorry we went to a
Macarena moment.
Yeah, you know, we're down here on Market Street, as most people know, and we had the door open. Well, somebody came in and was standing outside while we were talking, making strange motions like, you know, shut your mouth and all these other things. And it turns out that he appears to be on some kind of substance.
Well, you know, it just weird, strange.
He's gone now.
Yeah. So sorry that it kind of caught us off guard because, you know, for a minute we thought it was an emergency. And wow, like, you know, you're on the air live and we're talking to you. And somebody comes up and starts to make sign language outside the station, and there you go. So,
well, it wasn't like he couldn't talk. He could talk, but his mind was so befuddled on whatever he's on.
Well, let's go back to the fish.
Okay. All right.
That just freaks me out that 200 fish died from shock. I mean, didn't they test the temperature of the water? Didn't they go down as deep as the fish could possibly swim and find out what the temperature was before they dropped that many trout in the lake?
I think they were dropping, like, would they say, 15,000? They had 250. They wanted to say 250 died, 15,000 they put in Lake Shasta that in one time. And what they wanted, but the big thing is they want to make sure, as everybody knows, it's not a toxic spill, it's not pollution, it was just thermal shock. And they expect to have some of them happen. One of them, in fact, he said that one of the people watching said he was watching the four tanker trucks put the fish in the lake, and he said he thought the water was too warm. And he thought there was like 1,000 fish. The person that was watching thought there were like 1,000 fish that died. And there must be something they can do. I'm sure they must check the... I would hate to think they're going to be dumping 15,000 fish into a lake and not checking the temperature on it.
I mean, it's not like I'm pointing my finger to blame. I just actually would like to be educated on the process of what happens, where the fish grow, where they're held, and, you know, where they're... Do you know anything about it, Bob?
Coleman Fish Hatchery is an excellent place to go to learn about these things. Now, of course, you're talking about salmon rather than
right.
trout, but the process remains the same, and that's a fascinating tour. They do offer tours to the public, and, of course, Return of the Salmon coming up in October.
Been to the Coleman Fish Hatchery and saw that. It is fascinating how they tag each one of the fish, too. There are four women that sit in a remote truck, I'm drawing a blank on the word. Anyway, so it's not a stationary unit. It's a
mobile unit.
Mobile
they take
unit.
A mobile
thank
unit,
you.
And they bring the salmon through.
Okay. Yeah, and they tag each one of them so they can track them. It's fascinating. Everybody should go see that.
Well, I think they also cut off one part of a fin.
That's
so
right.
To show that they are not a native born fish, either a trout or a salmon. I can't imagine that, how many fins they cut off in thousands. Hey, you know what, Shasta Lake Council, let's talk about a council that's taking charge of what's going on. The Shasta Lake Council, we got to have one of them on us talk about this. They're, in fact, it's going to be today. They're having their meeting, too. They're going to contemplate tonight trying to rescind the salary raises granted up to at least 5 city employees. They gave a number of raises for the 2010-11 and 2011-12 fiscal years. Now they're going back and saying that they're kind of critical of these pay hikes in the uncertain economic times. And Lucero, this is Councilwoman Dolores Lucero, also wants the council to reconsider a series of 10% raises granted to the city's electric utilities director, assistant electric utilities director, etc. Which leads us to the next part, is on the following, the continuing saga of what's going on with the city and the police department and the unions. Patrick Jones says that he wants to consider seeking a major concession on pension benefits. Well, it says the city council exchanged, the city would drop a pair of ballots restoring measures seeking voter approval for extracting these concessions. Now, this is going to be considered tonight also at the city council meeting, which happens to start at 4 o'clock today because of the big night out where, you know, people take back your cities so you're not afraid of walking up and down the streets. This is going to be contentious. What they're saying is, hey, look, we've approved these ballot measures. We've said that let the people speak on what they want to do. The unions don't want it. And in reality, is just because they're passed doesn't mean anything. If they have the ballot measures and they pass 90-10, the only thing that means is you have bragging rights, say this is what the people want. There are no teeth to them that says you have to do it. On the other hand, we're at the point now where the unions just said that they turned down the city's offer of the union had offered 3.5% to be paid into their health care if they could extend the contracts another year. The city said, we'll accept the 3.5, but we're not going to extend the contracts. We're going to go and renegotiate the contracts when they come up. Very contentious. We've got Chief Peter Hansen coming in today. I'm not sure how much Peter can talk about this today, but it's his first appearance since saying that he has decided to stay on as the Reading Police Department's chief, which we're glad he's done. Just any number of things going on. And then again at the council, we're going to be talking about making Reading a dry city and not having, if they do pass the marijuana, if they pass the marijuana Proposition 19, to say that it's okay, Reading's not going to abide by it.
I mean, I'm looking at you with a blank stare because when you say dry, I mean, I think back you know.
It's exactly it.
Tennessee is dry. You can't buy anything on Saturdays or Sundays or in a grocery store.
You can buy liquor, but you won't be able to buy marijuana. That's what they're talking about. I don't know.
Well, you and I can't go into the store right now and buy marijuana.
It's because I haven't gone down and said I have a twitch in my left elbow. If I did, there's doctors around here that would give me a recommendation for as much marijuana as I could possibly pack on my body. I could bathe in it. I could swim in it. I could smoke it. I could rub it in. I could make poultices. I could make brownies. But it's only because I haven't asked. But I guarantee you, I could walk into any marijuana, not a collective. The collectives are there to provide medicinal marijuana under the recommendations of a doctor who looks at you, takes a very, very, very close look at your health, and then either decides to give you a recommendation or not. I would just like to see what the percentage would be of those who don't get marijuana. Anyway, I could walk down to one of those doctors right now today, take one page out of my health records, and I could get a recommendation.
Well, again, we keep saying every time we go over this subject, as it changes and wanes and has a different life form every day, every minute, is that we believe that there are those who could use, you know, medical marijuana. I'm sure it's helpful in many situations to get off the hard narcs.
Oh, no.
The hard narcotics,
you know,
I mean.
Absolutely. And in fact, the VA has just said, and we talked about this earlier, the VA who before said, if you're using marijuana and they take blood tests, and they find that you've got an illicit drug in your, when I say illicit, it's against the federal law to have marijuana or to use marijuana. If it's in your bloodstream or you're using it, they will not prescribe medication for you. That has just changed this week. I believe it was Monday late last week, that said if you are in one of the 14 states that allow medicinal marijuana, then the VA may give you drugs or may give you more of painkillers or can treat you with drugs, depending on what the doctor says that's treating you. So we got to take a quick break. Carl and the Bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It is 7:24 in the morning. It's Carl and the Bot. Our phone lines here are 605-4567.
Currently 66 degrees. It's going to be 101 today.
Oh,
weather's
wow.
Always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards.
Great place to go because you get up there. It's cooler. They've got misters on the patio. They've got air-conditioned dining. They serve lunch now.
And this Friday night, Candace Lavolsi, the wonderful North State harpist, will be there again from 6 to 9. Make your reservations. Last time she was sold out.
You know, people enjoyed that show so much. And then after that, there's going to be a week or so that we're going to be they're going to be dark on that Friday. But then you're back with the gang in August.
Got a great jazz combo coming up, and maybe a few surprises of some friends that may sit in. I'm hoping.
There you go.
They come up with their horns and they play a great night. A wonderful night. Go ahead, you've got something there.
Oh, no, I'm just saying this portion of the show is brought to you by B&T Satellite off Airport Road. They've been serving local customers since 1985. Doug Tooley, owner of the 82nd Airborne veteran, prides himself on the work he and his crews do to put in your surround sound, your home theater systems, and, of course, Dish Satellite. And he's got deals that you can get free HD for life with your Dish system, but it's that's something you need to talk to Doug about. Remember, B&T Satellite's off Airport Road, just down from Burrito Bandito, and the phone lines there are 244-1988. The, a couple of the other things that are going on today. you know, that we've noticed, besides the big city council meetings going on, and you have to be there at 4 p.m. today, remember, because of the fact that they're having the night out type thing. They're having the night out on, you know, where the city, where, you know, people have little parties in their neighborhoods to kind of, like, take back the night. And, again, that starts at 4 p.m. at the Reading City Hall. You know, today, when our guest is going to be at 7:30, we're looking at having the people from the Family Justice Center. And then at 8 o'clock, Police Chief Peter Hansen is going
to
be here.
And I'd like to bring something up before we go to break about, the safety, how important it is, the safety of life vests. There were six teens that drowned in Louisiana. What they were doing was wading in the water, and they did not know how to swim. And we can't begin to tell you how important it is for all of you listening to pass it on to your family, to your friends. Undercurrent. How about slipping in the mud when you're in the lake and all of a sudden, you know, just kind of the fear of, oh my gosh, I'm in the water. And to be in the water and not know how to swim without a life vest is a tragedy. And it just happened recently to six teenagers that were friends that were from the ages of 13 to 18. So this, again, be mindful when it comes to your experience. Another thing in the news, Sally Ride, first woman in space, she's opening her own science museum. I thought you might find that interesting, Bob. Yeah.
Ride, Sally Ride. Yep. That was quite a historic achievement.
You know, with all the things that are going on in our city here, you know, like we're talking about, you know, of course, the record searchlight, put on a how much people were making in the city, a number of the REU managers were making in the six figures. Paul Hoosier will be here on Thursday to discuss that. Tomorrow we've got Maurice Johannesson to come in and talk about. There's going to be a fundraiser on the 12th where it's going to have a kind of drive-through down at the Civic Center so you can donate to the new memorial building out there at IGO at the Veterans Cemetery out there. So he's going to be on tomorrow and discuss that. And again, like I said, Paul Hoosier from Reading Electric Utility. We had him on last week, but there's a lot of questions. And part of the questions is, you know, is the reason, why are the electric rates going up dramatically? And as he has said, it's been the cost have risen dramatically for REU. But, you know, things they don't count. You know, and the other thing that impacts on us significantly is that we have to have renewable energy sources. And one of the things we're going to talk about is biomass. And why is biomass, or the burning of the dead trees, the underbrush, things that they clear out, why is that not considered renewable? Why is hydro energy not considered renewable? And in the amount of lawsuits that have gone to stop people from cutting or burning and using different types of energy sources is just astronomical. And then you tie that into other things that are happening to our environment up here with the clear cutting of trees and pesticides and all that in the marijuana communes. It's just, you know, I see a dichotomy here. I just see so many things that are out of whack, that somebody needs to sit down and say, look, if you're going to do this, we need to do this.
On a positive note, after the Fox News break, we're going to bring on Angela Fitzgerald and the new director of the Family Justice Center. Stay with us. This is Carl and Linda Bott here on Free Fire Radio. You're listening to KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. It's 7:34 in the morning. Good morning.
Good morning. What do you think of when you hear Hoyo de Monterrey, Romeo y Julieta, Carlos Trano, Atro Fuente, Cohiba, La Gloria Cubano?
Well, until you said the last two, I thought it was a mad dash across the border.
Well, those are some of the fabulous cigars that are in the walk-in humidor in Tobacco and Brew. And August 19th, circle your calendar because they're having another cigar night where you get a free cigar. We've been to a few of those. Those are a lot of fun, Carl, because I know you're a cigar lover.
Those are huge successes. There's still a place up there, and you learn about cigars. They bring in different kinds and new ones that people can try out for free.
You can also get black and mild, black Backwoods, Swisher Sweets, Cheroots. Is it Cheroots or Cheroots? I don't know what those are. Al Capone's,
just a type of
White
cigar.
Owls. Yeah. It's very interesting.
2143 Hilltop Drive.
It's a whole language.
It is. And they also have Espresso Joe's there where you can get all types of coffee at different, made different ways, iced coffees and everything. That's Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive,
open,
Joe and Shelley.
Open from 9 to 7, Monday through Sundays. Wow. Great hours.
They're busy down there.
So we have in the studio with us now somebody who I greatly admire. Both of these people I greatly admire. I would like to introduce to you Angela Fitzgerald. And Angela, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
And you have something to announce today.
Yes. Well, I believe we're fully up and running. The District Attorney's Office, the Crime Victims Assistance Center, we are up and running in our new building at 1355. West Street. So anybody who needs our services, please come on down and see the new building and come talk to advocates.
Well, I know you've worked really, really hard. This has been somewhat of your baby that, you know, you went to go get that wonderful grant from Blue Cross. You worked diligently in putting together several fundraisers. From what I understand, were very successful.
Yes, yes.
And congratulations on that. And then I read and heard in the newspaper and elsewhere that you have a new director, and shall we introduce our director right now, live on the air?
Hi, my name is Michael Burke, and this is day two as the executive director of the Shasta Family Justice Center, and I'm really excited about this opportunity to give back to the community and provide a shelter that's a one-stop shop for victims of family violence.
Michael, tell us a little bit about your history.
My history. I came to Reading when I was just a pup. I was about 22 years old and started taking pictures at the Record Searchlight. I was a photojournalist for about 14 years and just fell in love with the community, got married, had kids, and you know, I thought I'd do the journalist thing. You do 2 years and you double circulation, which in the newspaper industry, I don't think that's the case anymore. But and that was the early 90s, and I decided that you know this was the place I wanted to stay and raise my family. So I left the Record Searchlight and started to run Plus One Mentors. I had started mentoring a boy when he was 7. I'm proud to say I'm still mentoring him 11 years later. Actually, not mentoring him. He's my buddy now. And he's getting ready to go into the Air Force this month, I think it is. And he's living up in Mount Shasta and doing great. As a nonprofit director there, I learned a lot about the nonprofit world. And then moved over to Mercy Medical Center, where I was the communications coordinator over there and did public relations and marketing and media relations and things like that. And I was at Mercy for about 7 years and then saw the opening for the Justice Center and thought, wow, this is really powerful entity here in Reading, and it's time. It's time to have a place where victims of family violence, which is domestic violence, sexual assault, elderly abuse, and child abuse, can have a place to go that's safe, local, easy to find, and I am proud to say that we secured our building. We moved in yesterday, my first day at the job. I got to spend in my new office, and the office is at 1670 Market Street, Suite 300, and that's in the atrium in the Market Street Promenade.
All right. So are you going to have a grand opening?
We are going to have a grand opening / fundraiser, and that's going to be September 1st at the building inside the atrium, and we're also trying to... We have a couple of radio stations, which you guys are welcome to come broadcast live if you want, from the roof of the downtown mall. And we're working with some other local agencies to come help us raise funds for this organization.
Will that be the day of September 1st that you're doing?
Yes.
Yes, it'll also be the open house and a fundraiser. And we'll have art displays, we'll have food, entertainment, great event. And that'll be from 12:30 to 4:30 on September 1st.
12:30 to 4:30 September 1st. That's open to the public.
Yes.
So what you're trying to do is, at that point, do you pay to get in, or is it donations?
It's free. There are donations if you'd like. but it is a free event. Free event.
We get closer to September 1st. Got to take a break here. Come right back. We're talking to Angela Fitzgerald and Michael Burke, and we're talking about the Family Justice Center. If you have calls, 605-4567. This is a wonderful new addition to the North State. Congratulations. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, this is Diane.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. It is 7:43 on August 3rd.
Oh my gosh!
I know. What can I say? You know, I know you were still writing July on the checks yesterday.
Yeah, I was.
Hey, our guests today
can't help it.
Are Angela Fitzgerald and Michael Burke from the Family Justice Center. Michael has just taken over there as the director of the Family Justice Center, and Angela is the one that was the face of the Family Justice Center and pushed so much of this thing
through. Warrior in the wings.
Out of the Shasta County. One of the ones.
Right.
One of the ones. And this was under Shasta County District Attorney Jerry Benito, who was very, very helpful in this, too. Was one of the ones that was backing this. So, Angela, tell us exactly what the Family Justice Center is. There may be some people out there that are still not quite certain.
Well, it's a place where you can come and get most of your services met under one roof. It's a place where instead of coming to a center and being sent out to 60 different referrals, you have what you need in one place. You can have your medical services, your advocacy needs, your housing needs all met in one place.
I believe one of the things you talked about before was the fact is that people that need these services, that need help like this, usually don't have cars. In many cases, they'll have children. So you needed to have a place, and they would end up going to 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 12 different places, at least, maybe more than that, to try to receive the help that they needed or the assistance they needed. If in some cases it was just just some directions or just somebody to talk to about what to do next. And now, Michael, you've got everything in one spot.
We're working on setting up the office. We have terrific partners. I just gave a tour of the office yesterday to Wells Fargo Bank. Wells Fargo Bank is going to fully operate our children's room. They're gonna paint a stagecoach on the wall. They came in yesterday to see where to put the TV, how they're gonna get the Wii in there for the kids to play. We have a nice room set aside just for the children, and attached to that room is an interview room where we're gonna put a window so the parents, the mom, can sit in there and watch her kids as she tells her story to her advocate. And it'll be a great place for her to feel safe and for the children to have fun and not have to listen to the stories. Because in these instances, the kids are usually taken along with the parents who are looking for help, and they might have to hear those stories, and that's not something they need to hear. We do have wonderful partners at the center. We have Legal Services of Northern California, the Shasta Women's Refuge. We have all local law enforcement. When I interviewed for the job, Scott Mayberry was one of the people who interviewed me from the Reading Police Department, obviously the District Attorney's Office and Angela and her department, the Victims Witness, is just a huge, huge asset. The Child Abuse Prevention Council, we couldn't do it without them. They're just a wonderful, wonderful partner in this. We also have the Intertribal Council of Northern California is going to set up shop in our office. They're going to have four people working right out of the Justice Center to help the intertribal needs of all of Northern California. And we're also going to work with the Health and Human Service Agencies of California, the chaplains' services, and we're open. If you think that you have the services out there that could benefit our clients, please give me a call. Right now, we don't have phones up and running. We are very new, and we'd love to talk to you about our wish list here in a second. But you can reach me on my cell phone, which the number is 530-524-9014. And if you have, if you'd like to talk about the Justice Center, I'd love to talk to you about it.
That's wonderful. And then you're going to have another fundraiser open to the public. I understand that's August 18th. Share that with us.
Yes, it's called An Evening to Remember. It's at Market Street Wines, adjacent to the Market Street Steakhouse. And we are going to, from 5:30 to 8:30 in the evening, August 18th, it's Wednesday night, we are going to have a classical violinist come in. She is wonderful. Her name is Nicole. We are going to have wine, cheese pairing, gourmet appetizers, just a night of networking, talking about the Shasta Family Justice Center, and it is a fundraiser, of course. We're going to have a great silent auction. Brian at Market Street Wines is donating a week in Mexico.
Ooh.
So for our silent auction. So we're asking for some silent auction items before that time. We're trying to have a great event, and tickets are only $25 a piece, and all the proceeds will go to help the women and children of the Shasta Family Justice Center.
And if you have a silent auction item you'd like to donate, you can go ahead and call me at 530-524-9014.
How many men come through the doors seeking assistance?
Not as many as women and children, but there are, I would say, at least 10% out of our community in needing assistance come in for the same types of assistance as, you know, women do.
How many of the same women do you see? I mean,
we had over 4,300 clients just in the past year.
Are those unique clients or are those repeats?
I
don't want to put you on the spot.
No,
here,
I don't know.
But
I
what I'm trying to get at is
a lot of new clients.
Okay,
there are more so new than I've been doing this for about 12 years, and so I've gotten to know a lot of people in the community.
Right.
And more so new than, and it's not, everyone thinks it's a socioeconomic. It's not. I have doctor's wives come in. I've had, you know, not to name it, you know, but it's just across
it's
the board.
It's across the socioeconomic network.
I mean, right. You know, you see the big house on the hill and you think that they've got the perfect life and you don't know, you know, what could be going on behind closed doors. So,
well, you know. The reason I brought that up is a lot of times, you know, the same family, in this case women usually and the children, are getting abused over and over again before it's enough.
Right.
And then a lot of that is you all building them up to the point where they can seek help, isn't
they
it?
They do. They have to trust. And it takes, we know nationally, the average 6 to 7 times being abused before a woman will leave her abuser.
And that's what I was getting at.
And that so they, those that children go
yeah.
through that.
Think about the number. Think about 6 to 7 times. That's 6 to 7 times where you think you possibly could die.
And we know nationally that only 25% of those being abused report. So if I know that I have 200 reports a month just in Shasta County of domestic violence, there are over 125 arrests made. Think of how many children. If that's only 25%, how many? And there's 2 to 3 children in each family on average. How many are actually out there in our county that there is abuse going on?
I know that we've discussed this before, but has the number risen in the last, say, 5 years?
Well, looking at doing some of the research for the job, from 2005 to 2008, serious domestic violence case filings in Shasta County increased by 54%. The state average is about 500 calls per year per 100,000 population. We're right about 100,000 population. So if you look back at 2007, there was 937 calls. And I think Angela's told me only 1 in 4 people call. So, you know, times that 1,000 that called in Shasta County by 4, we're almost double the state average in 2007. And in 2008, it was 867 calls for family violence.
Well, you know, we've got, it's interesting to, I'd be interested to see what the figures are in the last years with unemployment skyrocketing. But it's already, unemployment was already bad enough. To see it skyrocketing like this.
Foreclosures of homes, that definite loss of who you thought you were and not being able to deal with that. And I think that the probably lashing out is probably a common thing.
It is. Our crime analysis reports indicate a rise in use of alcohol, a rise in the actual physical violence when there is a decrease in the income. And right around the end of the month, when the bills need to be paid and the rent needs to be paid, is when there is a higher incident of violence going on.
Well, our guests today are Angela Fitzgerald and Michael Burke. We are very excited about the Shasta Family Justice Center that is opening. Stay with us after the breaks. This is Carl and Linda Bott here on Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hi, this is Diane.
1460, it's Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning, August 3rd.
Say that's right.
It's 7:54 in the morning.
Let's get on about how hot it's going to be today. It's going to be great. 102 degrees. What sleeper? You know, we can take that. Currently 71 degrees. Weather is always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards, our favorite destination getaway. That begin this Friday, will Candice Lavolsi, our wonderful North State Harpist, will be out there from 6 to 9. And then you want to mark some other dates, August 20th, August 27th. wonderful summer music series out in Ensalmo. Our guests this morning are Angela Fitzgerald and Michael Burke. Welcome back to the program. And we're taking your calls, 605-4567, if you have any calls regarding the Family Justice Center. We have about 5 minutes left before we've got Chief Hansen coming in. Want to find out closing thoughts. Where do we need to go? What do we have to do to really help you guys kick off with the big bang and help your the Justice Center flourish?
We'd like to have the Justice Center completely set up for the September 1st grand opening. And imagine moving into your new house and walking through and all the walls are bare and all the rooms are empty. Our facility has 17 spaces, with about 14 of those spaces being office spaces. So we're in desperate need of brand new or close to new desks, chairs, conference room tables, printers, copy machines, file cabinets, you know, all the things that you would need to set up an office. We're in need of those things. We have a beautiful kitchen. We're going to have a separate kitchen just for our clients to sit down, have some coffee, watch their kids play. So we're in need of coffee pots and microwaves and refrigerators. You know, the cupboards are empty right now and the rooms are bare. So if you have something you'd like to donate that's new or like new, if you're a business out there and, you know, we have a 501c3 partner that we're working with until we set up our own, we have that all available. I do have email also. It's mburke.sfjc, Sasta Family Justice Center, @gmail.com. Or again, my phone number is 530-524-9014 if you'd like to donate some items.
And your Burke is with an E on the end?
B-U-R-K-E.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on the line, Kay.
Hi, Linda and Carl.
Hello.
Good morning.
And Mike and Angela, is it?
Good morning.
Yes. Good for you.
I'm just a little confused. Now, is the new service going to be in the old library building?
No, that's where the Crime Victims Assistance Center is located. There are services
I can't hear you.
There are services there at the old county library. That is at 1355 West Street, and that is
right.
The Crime Victims Assistance Center. So you can get services there, but for the Shasta Family Justice Center, that
mm-hmm.
is at 1670 Market Street, Suite
300. So it's going to be all in the
downtown mall.
What used to be the Mount Shasta Mall.
Yes.
mean the downtown mall.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, Kay.
Well, that makes it, there again, there's an address. Sometimes you've got to have
a visual.
There you go.
The visual's right upstairs from Leatherby's inside the mall. Everybody knows where Leatherby's is, and we're right upstairs,
in the
elevator.
That makes it easier. It's right above Leatherby's, right there in the mall.
In the corner, between the post office grill and Leatherby's.
Yeah, and that's right off of Placer Street.
Yes.
Okay. Well, congratulations, and you're in your second day of the doors being open.
Yes.
Anybody come by?
And not yesterday. Just my wife brought me lunch.
Okay. And, again, you know, you need desks and refrigerators and chairs and everything what it would be to set up an office and the kind of a home-like environment. Do you need any kind of clothes? Can people, do you need any kind of these things, stuffed animals?
Stuffed animals would have to be new because of, you know, probably my work in the hospital, infection control. We want to make sure that they're high quality and new. We are setting up several living room settings. So people can just sit on couches, be comfortable. So if you have new living room furniture, that kind of stuff is definitely needed.
Now, this is done under a grant, and it's not costing money.
Yes.
This is important.
Grant and donation.
It's grant and donation, so all this is being done at no cost to the taxpayers. That's picking up a very valuable service right here in River City and Redding, but it's not costing anything.
That's a good point, because financial donations are also accepted. You know, you can contact me for that, too. If you do have financial ability to donate to the center, we would definitely welcome that.
Well, yeah, our guests today have been Angela Fitzgerald and Michael Burke from the Family Justice Center. Michael's heading it up. They've been open for 2 days. They're going to have a fundraiser on August 18th and another one on September 1st. But we'll have you all back on before then to talk about that. Let people know, and this is needed. This was needed in the community. It's been done through a lot of hard work. And again, at the bottom line is it's not costing the taxpayers any money, but it's helping our community so much. So we need to get behind this.
All right.
Like I said,
thank
you.
Paul, you guys have been so supportive throughout this whole thing. You guys have been there right since the beginning. And just want to say thank you so much.
Thank you. How can we not?
Yeah, I mean, this is something, again, it's for the community. And if it's a...
the numbers are staggering. And so here's a service of being able to make it easy for those people in need. Thank you so much for being our guest today. We will be right back after these messages. You're listening to Free Fire Radio. This is Carl and Linda Bott here on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. You're listening to KCNR, Shasta Redding.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It is 8:05 in the morning. Our phone lines here are 605-4567. We're streaming at kcnr1460.com. Write Linda an email at linda@kcnr1460.com. Good morning. It is August the 3rd.
And yeah, your birthday's in 2 days.
That's right, 2 days. I'll be 40.
And you officially get...
I'll be 40.
You officially get... Well, actually, according to ARP, I remember when I turned 50, I thought, well, okay, it's not so bad. Goldie Hawn's on the cover. So I didn't mind turning 50. Yeah, it came in the mail. But, you know, you've been getting it for a few years now.
Maybe I'm celebrating the anniversary of my 40th birthday. So, anyway. Hey, our guest today is Redding Police Chief Peter Hansen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chief.
Good morning, and thank you.
Thank me for?
Thank you for making the decision, not just for myself, on behalf of many people, the decision to stay with us.
Well, you're welcome.
We need you.
And actually, Carl was one of the people that spoke to me about changing my mind, and I was approached by many people in the community about reconsidering my decision, and really, it came boiled down to putting the needs of the department ahead of my own. And the department's going through a lot of transition this year. We're facing some very challenging times this year with the loss of, you know, 14 more officers and further reductions. And it's going to be a pretty challenging time for the department as well as the community in terms of what service we're able to offer. So really, it boiled down to, you know, what's best for the department and putting those needs ahead of my own and trying to help the department work through this next year. And what I was very happy about, and all those people I spoke to, is they were very complimentary of the department and the people in the department. And really, the reason our department has a good reputation is because the work that those line officers and community service officers and the records people do every day. It's nice to be the leader of the organization, but it really is about, you know, when you have an issue and an officer comes to help you, how well that person performs. And I think that's what builds our reputation.
Well, you know, and just one more thing I just want to say, and you know, on the tail of that is that, you know, a lot of times what's happening with our government and with some roles of leadership, some of us are feeling lost. And so we need leaders. And the fact that what you did for me, and I know I speak for other people, showed me that even though you may have, come to a point where you weren't happy with something or disagreed and thought I'm moving on or whatever you were thinking at that time, you came back and said, I'm here for you. And boy, do we need that now. So thank you.
Well, we do, and we need some stability, not only within the organization, but we need some... hopefully some common sense, some leadership at all levels of our community. And like I said, it was the leaders in our community that came and approached me, business leaders and leaders in the legal community and the law enforcement community and members of my own department who asked me to reconsider again, very unselfishly about not what was best for them, but what's best for the community. So you know, I think we have a lot of people like that. That's what's made our community strong over the years is that we have a lot of people who are very dedicated to what's good for the whole community.
It is, and it's for some people it would be easier to walk away. And but I insist with you, Peter, that was not going to be. Is that this would be a decision that would, if you had done it, would have bothered you a lot.
Well, that's what my wife said. You know, yeah. She said, you know, you're not done, and I don't want this decision to not set with you for the next few years and you to be unsettled. And she says, go back, finish what you need to do, and when things start to turn around and, you know, we get the department and the community starts to recover a little bit from what we're facing, you know, then it's time to let the reins go and get somebody else. So I've not put a new time limit on this. I'm going to stay until I feel more comfortable about the department and the community being in a little bit better shape.
Well, great. You know, and like Linda says, we're glad that you did that, because, you know, I look at it like when we're in the middle of a firefight right now, that we need leadership at all levels, just like you said, and that is very important. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we want to discuss what's going on with a number of different things, well, Proposition 19, but also what's going on with the City Council tonight. A new addition to the what the City Council wants to talk about as far as negotiations. So, Carl Lindebot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Are you taking? Good morning, North State. It's 8:13 in the morning. You're listening to KCNR 1460. That's right, 1460 on your dial, the home of Free Fire Media. Oh, I just love that song. Hey, August 5th. Do you realize that it's August 5th that starts Elvis Week in Memphis?
August 5th?
It was August 5th when I drove back to Nashville. I moved there for 5 years, and I remember going through. I have a cup. I need to bring it in. Celebratory cup. I think it's the kind of, we're coming up on the week that he died, and they call it, that's when they start to do, everybody comes to Memphis, and it's booked up all over the place. By the way, this portion of the show is brought to you by BNT Satellite off Airport Road, just down from Burrito Bandito. Doug Tooley, the owner, is from the 82nd Airborne, and he's been serving local customers since 1985. If you're ever thinking about going dish, go to Doug.
He's the one, and he's been doing great work. We get lots of phone calls about how good he is. Our guest is Reading Police Chief Peter Hansen, who, it's not new news now, but it was, and by the way, when you send us an email so we could have broken that story, send it directly to me, because it went into another account, and we didn't get to see it till afterwards. Oh, otherwise, we could have just said, "Yeah,
we got off the air. We were really excited because we went, oh my God!"
Oh, that's okay. No, I'm just, you know. But thanks for sending us an email on it. Okay, tonight, or I should say this afternoon, on the City Council, and this just broke today too. I guess it happened Friday, but Mayor Patrick Jones says that they want to consider seeking a major concession on pension benefits from the unions in exchange, but they would drop a pair of ballot measures seeking voter approval for extracting such concessions during upcoming labor negotiations. What do you think about? Do you know anything about this, or what do you think about this, Peter?
Well, a few city council meetings ago, the city council authorized to put on the November ballot for the city of Reading Measure A and Measure B. And those measures would require future city councils during contract negotiations with the bargaining units of the city to take a certain position relative to pensions and medical benefits. And it was hotly contested at the time, and it was passed, and so those measures are moving forward. The deadline for putting the measures on the November ballot is Friday, August 6th. And so
This Friday.
So Mayor Jones wants to make an offer to the bargaining units to withdraw those initiatives at today's council meeting at 4 o'clock, in exchange for the council or for the bargaining units all together agreeing that they would accept the condition of paying half towards their pensions. So this is certainly there's a need for pension reform in California. The pension system as it is currently is not sustainable. That's clearly shown by PERS and anyone that studies the financial actuarials associated with pensions. I'm a member and representative on the California Police Chiefs Association. We have just written and produced a research paper dedicated to suggesting that pension reform is necessary and how it could be done with certain changes to make it sustainable in the future and still maintain enough benefits to attract candidates to come into the law enforcement profession, because recruiting and retention of qualified candidates and high-quality people is somewhat a difficult task. So there is a need for pension reform, and there is a need for some adjustments to government employees on a statewide basis, but also a city basis in terms of our pay and benefits. Because of the economy. The economy is failing, and it cannot sustain, you know, where we're going right now. So there's a need for that. How we get there is the key, and that's what's been the sticking point between the city and the unions, is the process of negotiations or lack of negotiations, and whether or not there have been any willingness to compromise on both sides of the issue. So this latest attempt by the mayor, I think, is to reach out to the unions to suggest, hey, you know, we are willing to consider removing these ballot initiatives in exchange for an agreement. And, of course, the ballot initiatives are expensive. It's, you know, about $50,000 or so to put both initiatives on the ballot, and that has to be paid by Friday. The difficulty associated with today's meeting is that the deadline is Friday. And I know the police unions have a bylaw which requires 10 days notice on any contract change. So really there isn't enough time for the unions to be able to respond, or at least the police union to be able to respond and have that be a valid vote on the part of the union. So there's difficulties associated with this. However, the mayor is reaching out, and he's trying to you know, reach a compromise, and you know, he's trying to make something happen. And I think that's important. As we look forward to what needs to happen in the future, we need to stop what we have been doing and be more willing to compromise, more willing to talk to each other. I'm just not sure that this is going to be successful today.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, Chief. The thing is that everybody has to take a step back, take a deep breath. And right now there's so much antagonism going on. From, you know, even though both sides will say, oh, that's not true, we know it is true. There is a different there's some animosity going on here. If they don't say it on the air or in public, they say it in private.
Well, and this was very similar that, you know, just at the last council meeting 2 weeks ago, the police unions came forward with an offer of a concession. And, again, that was an effort on the part of the police unions to reach an agreement with the city, and the city council turned the offer down, not willing to deal with the conditions associated with the offer. So it is going back and forth. I'm encouraged that at least they both understand that something needs to be done to try and help the situation. But, you know, there is some animosity, there is some stubbornness, and there is some a lot of room for compromise on both sides, I think.
I think so, too. And that's something that we have to, you know, I don't know how we, the public, could do that, because when it gets right down to it, it's going to have to be some people that in the decision-making process have to say, you know what, what's best for our community here? And like you said, both sides, there's room for give on this.
Right.
So we've got to figure out how to do that. We've got to figure out what's best for our community, keep our first responders on the street, but yet find some way to pay for this, because we're destroying ourselves how much money we owe.
You know, it took us many, many years of negotiations to get to the point where we are right now in terms of what the city employees make in terms of pay and benefits. And you know, we use industry comparisons, what other police departments our size, you know, make in terms of pay and benefits, and that's sort of a benchmark for how we do things. But you can't change that overnight. It took us 20, 30 years to get here. It needs to go through a process to change that as well. And so it's not something that's going to happen quickly. It needs to happen over some period of time to allow people to make some adjustments.
Okay. Hey, we've got to take a quick break here. When we come back, we want to finish up this discussion and get into Proposition 19, because that seems to have a lot of, you know, that's a lot of people with strong opinions on it.
And immigration. And we're going to be taking your emails. Email me, Linda, at KCNR 1460. The computer's up. Taking your calls at 605-4567. We'll see you after these messages.
In a metaphor.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio with Carl and Linda Bott right here on KCNR 1460. It's 8:24 in the morning on August the 3rd, and our guest is Reading Police Chief for the foreseeable future and beyond, Peter Hansen. Good morning,
welcome
Chief.
Back.
Good morning.
Yeah, welcome aboard, Chief.
Hey, if you have a question for Chief Hansen and you don't feel like you're not a place to call, do email me, Linda at KCNR 1460. And give us a call here, 605-4567 hotline for the studio right now. We've got Chief Hansen on until 9 o'clock, and I guess you guys were going to talk about Proposition 19.
Well, we are, but let me finish up this last thing here with the meeting today. I think it's important that people go there and see what's going on. And if one thing that I gleaned it right, Chief, was that you think that there is, you know, people are starting to reach out a little bit, but we still have to have cooler heads in this. You know, people have got to take a step back, take a deep breath, get back into it again without this.
Well, I am encouraged that for whatever reason, you know, lately, there are starting to reach out. And whether or not we're able to come to an agreement or not, I don't know. But, you know, this week it's the mayor's coming forward. You know, a couple of weeks ago it was the association still willing to come forward. And I think that is headed in the right direction. Now, whether or not we're successful, I don't know. But I think at least both parties are starting to realize that, you know, something has to be done here. For the benefit of the community and certainly the police department. And all of the unions have an opportunity here. Unfortunately, the timeline is very difficult to work with.
Right. You know, one of the things that we talked about during the break is it's taken 20 to 30 years to get to where we are right now under negotiations. And everybody, I have not talked to anybody, whether it's in the police association, the city council, any of the people we've had on here from the city council saying is that everything, the unions, I guess the pension system needs to be tweaked. It needs to be changed.
Right.
The question is how to do it and under what time frame.
Right.
So if everybody agrees that it has to be changed, I guess we just need somebody, we need some honest brokers in there to say this is what's right for everybody. And I hope that we're finding these people.
Well, when they started a statewide retirement system in California, and this was 40 or 50 years ago, it was based on LAPD model, which was based on the military model. 20 years, 50%, you retired. And that was after a career in the military, and LAPD has the same model, and it's been changed over the years. PERS developed their system based on that, and it grew. It grew exponentially sometimes to include miscellaneous employees and safety employees, and it got very complicated, and the formulas started to change. But it really boils down to the numbers, and you can change the formula, whether it's the percentage that the employee pays, or the amount of the benefits, or how it's invested, that can make a sustainable system. And small changes in any one of those categories, whether the maximum amount employees are allowed to earn, or those sorts of things, can mean a big difference in terms of the sustainability and the financial strength of PERS.
And that's what we're looking for, is the sustainability.
Right.
So the county and the cities aren't paying $100 million out of their own pockets because
right.
of CalPERS has made some decisions over yeah. the past.
And what happens is there's actually three portions to that payment. There's the employee contribution, there's the city contribution, and then there's the contribution that PERS says the cities have to pay because their investments do well or they don't do well. And that fluctuates quite a bit. And right now, of course, it's at a low point in terms of their investments. The cities are paying a lot. There have been times in the past where the city wasn't paying anything.
That's right.
And over the years, the employees, through agreements, in lieu of pay raises, had the city pay their portion. So the employee's perspective is that we already pay for our contributions. We did that through negotiations years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that times have changed. And when times were good, the benefits improved. Well, now times aren't so good, so benefits need to be adjusted. And that's what's only fair.
Okay, and that's absolutely true. And for people that are not familiar with the military retirement, the most that you can retire at is at 75% of your base pay, and after 30 years. So, and I think they've even changed it now at 20 years you get a percentage, but I'm not exactly sure how that is because it's been since I got out.
Yeah.
But I'd sure like to have that contract. That we could go on up on it. But that's a real important point you made, Chief, was that it's as long as it's sustainable, it's one thing. But when it gets the other way, we have to adjust. And it, you know, that adjustment doesn't mean it has to stay there forever either. I mean,
right.
It can be adjusted.
And no one wants a system that fails or goes bankrupt, because then that punishes not only the current employees, but all the retirees that have gone before. And, you know, another misconception is that the city continues to pay for people that are retired, and they don't. Once they leave the city service or a county service, they go on the statewide system. The city doesn't pay towards their retirement.
They don't pay for the health care?
Yeah,
they pay for the health care.
Pay
right.
50% of the health care.
Right.
And, again,
okay.
another negotiated benefit, which, again, at the time, you know,
Okay, look, we've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get to the Proposition 19. We have some people lining up on the phone, too. So this is a Carl and DeBott, Free Fire Radio. Oh, I guess we're stretching.
Well, if you can make it quick, maybe we can get to the phone. We're going to wait until after we get back from the break.
Because we don't know who it is. Bruce, we've got only got like 20 seconds left. So we're going to give you a full question on the other side there. That's Carl and DeBott on Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. Join us after these messages.
Good morning.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460.
It's 8:32 in the morning. Our guest this morning is Chief Peter Hansen. And Bruce, thanks for hanging on the phone. Good morning. You're on the line.
Well, good morning, everybody up there.
Good morning.
Question for Pete there. Does he agree or disagree with Arizona's 1070?
I think that if you look at what was intended by 1070 was for Arizona to be able to enforce federal law. So was it written poorly? I don't know. But I think the intent is very pure. Therefore, I support what they are trying to do. I'm sure they're very frustrated in Arizona with what or the lack of action on the part of the federal government. And I think if the people in Arizona believe that they want to enforce federal law and give the authority for their local law enforcement officers to enforce federal law, that's fine. We actually have a very similar law in California with some slight differences, Penal Code Section 834B, and it says that
I'm sitting right here holding it, and that was my next
okay,
question.
Well, that section's the difference between the Arizona law and the California law is that the California law requires law enforcement officers to notify the federal authorities if we suspect a person is in our custody that's here illegally. And the difference between California law and Arizona law is really the difference between arrest and detention. California law requires it if the person is arrested and in custody. The Arizona law requires it upon detention. So if you talk to someone on the street or in a a traffic stop and getting a ticket and a passenger in a vehicle, things like that. So it's a little bit broader than California law is, but in very many ways it's very similar to California law. And for years, we have utilized that law. If we arrest someone who's here and we believe they're here illegally, we will notify immigration or Border Patrol at the time, and now it's Immigration Control Enforcement, to check their immigration status and, if necessary, deport them. So we've utilized that law. It's worked very successfully here in California. But it's a California law, and it really does not make any reference to federal law other than to say, notify the federal authorities if you suspect this person's here illegally.
Well, I'm glad to hear what you feel on that Arizona law, because I think this immigration issue is going to come to a boil in the next year here because of just so many different outlets on it and so many different things that it's causing our country. So
what I really think is interesting is that the position of the federal government, who is willing to take on a state over this particular issue, who's trying to enforce federal law, and again, it goes back to the whole marijuana issue, which we'll talk about here in a minute, is that the federal government is not choosing to take that on as an issue because the state has passed, medical marijuana laws, and, about 10 or 12 states have. So the federal government's sort of projecting an image of conflict. They're in conflict with themselves or what laws they're choosing to enforce and enforce federal law, what laws they're not. And they're not, my impression is they're not applying it equally.
Well, I'm fully in agreement there, and I'm just hoping that we'll remember in November and take care of this problem, maybe. Anyhow, thanks, Pete, for staying on there, and we'll let somebody else weigh in on this.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks, Bruce. In fact, our next caller is Assemblyman Jim Nielsen.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, and how are you today?
We're wonderful. Thanks for calling in. Our guest today is Peter Hansen.
Talking about medical marijuana, I'd love to pipe in. Or marijuana, period.
Okay, we're just getting ready to roll into that one. So what do you think about this one, Jim?
It's terrible, 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 and I hope the council votes to support our efforts today, Carl.
Okay, now you're against having Proposition 19 passed. Is that correct?
I absolutely am. And I'll briefly mention about the welcome home thing, what's going on that for the Veterans Service Officers funding and
right.
The budget, briefly.
Okay.
I'm so sorry I missed you when you came into the office, too, dang it. It's one of those out-of-control days, so sorry, and thank you for the thoughtful card.
Well, you know what? What we saw you in action is that you're extremely focused, and you were very focused on from one appointment to another appointment, and we did drop in, so it was great to see Brenda, and we love what you're doing.
Well, man, you should have seen me yesterday. Oh my gosh!
Okay, the welcome home is what you were going to talk about, Senator or Assemblyman.
Yeah, I'd like to just give you an update where things are on that. I talked to John yesterday, Kleckner, and there's going to be a rally. I think Thursday at the Capitol, and I'm going to be seeing some of the whoever the veterans are that are coming down from the north. I'm asking them to come in and see me.
And
the point is that what is in the budget right now is a 32% increase in funding, but it's less than the $8 million the governor offered. And you know, my position was the only thing I had to vote on was, do I vote for $1.2 million, the increase, or do I vote against an increase? There wasn't even a question of getting $8 million. There were not the votes in conference committee by at least 6-4 votes. There was no chance. But even Denise DeCheney acknowledged, the chair, that I committed to continue to work to try to get as much possible increased funding to that program as possible. I'm working with Colonel Cook on it.
Hey, Jim, you are breaking up really bad on this, but it sounded to me like you said that on the funding part that you were restricted on what you could do.
I fought for the full $8 million, Carl, but there were not the votes in the conference committee. That's 10 people on the conference committee. It was clear to me that 6 votes were not going to be supported. There were just not for the full funding. So then the proposal that was before us was not for $8 million, it was $1.2 million.
Okay.
And when I did not succeed in disposing members to vote for the 8, then I did vote for the 1.2.
Okay. So when you couldn't convince on that, so you wanted to get the best that you could then, right?
Yeah, but now I'm going to business. I'm trying to come up with a strategy to get the money restored, or not restored, but increased.
Okay. Hey, Jim, thank you so much for your phone call. It's catch you one time on a landline here, or the next time you roll through town, get you on the show.
Yes, sir, we bet you.
Okay, thank you so much.
You know, Jim Nielsen called me last week, Wednesday, and we spoke briefly about the resolution that's been going before council today, and he's very much in support of the resolution and very against Proposition 19. And Prop 19 is the ballot initiative in November, which will basically legalize marijuana for recreational use. It also allows for local government to determine if they want to tax it or somehow additionally regulate it. my view is that it's another very poorly written initiative. You know, we've been struggling with the interpretations and the litigation associated with Proposition 215 for about the last 15 years. And we have worked very hard in the city to make sure we comply with the law, as well as provide an opportunity for those people who need marijuana for medical reasons to have access in an open and not back alley kind of method. And we've worked pretty hard there. We have a good relationship with the collective operators, and they're operating in a pretty good fashion, I think. We still continue to work with them and revising. But, you know, Proposition 19 is different. That would just basically open the doors for recreational use, and I think there will be associated problems with, more people driving under the influence. And there's one key factor to this proposition that's very concerning to me. Is there's a provision in there that undoes the Ross decision. There was a case decision regarding an employer having rights to discipline an employee who is under the influence of marijuana. And this proposition would undo that, and it would basically prohibit an employer from taking action against an employee who comes to work under the influence of marijuana. And you wouldn't want to have an employee there, whether intoxicated on alcohol or marijuana or any controlled substance that impaired their ability to work. And so there's some very poorly written sections to this initiative, and I think it would be detrimental to our community and to employers in general. And I don't think that the tax benefits that they report are going to occur would actually materialize.
Well, that was one of the questions we had from one of our, and we've got to take a break after this, from one of our listeners who wrote in. He said, well, wouldn't being able to tax the marijuana, bringing it in, taxing it, you know, to help pay for
law enforcement.
Law enforcement, or pay for, well, going into the general fund just to be able to pay our bills. To, you know, if they legalized it, how much can we? How much? You know, they could tax it 25%.
And have legal pot farms.
See, and I'm not sure you could. I was talking to the city attorney yesterday, and he feels that you could only tax it to recover your costs associated with administering the program. So it may be almost a break-even kind of a tax. So certainly there would be costs associated with regulating it. So again,
well, how can they then tax us on other things like tobacco? And they, you know, they just whack away at the tobacco. I mean, why couldn't you treat it the same way? I wonder. I mean, I'm just wondering.
See, and that's the part that I'm pointing out. With poorly written initiatives, you get poorly, and of course, you keep lawyers employed for years, but it creates a whole other set of challenges. So what we're taking to council tonight is not a proposal to tax or regulate. This is strictly to have the council take a position in opposition to Proposition 19, and which is this same position is supported by the League of California Cities, the California Police Chiefs, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, and many notable organizations, including both candidates for governor, Jerry Brown and Meg Whitman, are in opposition to Prop 19, as are both Attorney General candidates, Steve Cooley and Kamala Harris. And I had an opportunity to meet with them last week, and they reaffirmed their position. They're all four in opposition to Prop 19.
I heard that Barbara Boxer and Feinstein were against it.
I've also heard that. So, and again, Assemblyman Nielsen, very strong opponent to Prop 19.
Right. Okay, we've got to take a quick break here. Our guest is Reading Police Chief Peter Hansen, Carl and DeBott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, home of Free Fire Media. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. Joe and Shelley got the finest tobacco emporium in the state of California, maybe west of the Mississippi. They got the greatest walk-in humidor. Romeo and Juliet, different types of cigars. They've been in business for 37 years. They've supported this community. There isn't anybody that goes into Tobacco and Brew that does not enjoy the service and the attitude of the people that are working there. And of course, Espresso Joe's, in this hot weather, 103 today, is going to be serving a lot of iced coffee.
I have a question for you, Chief Hansen, that's a little off of you know, the topics that we're talking about. Tasers. I have a question about a taser, because we were watching a program last night. We laughed so hard. You know, it's so funny. You know, the don't tase me, bro. When somebody gets tased, how long does that last in your body?
Instantaneous recovery.
Really? Because this guy
so
was so funny.
Does it keep coming back hours later?
No, it's like flipping on a light switch.
Okay.
And as soon as the light switch is off, the electricity is off and the effects are over. And I was one of the first taser instructors at our department, and the training I went through, there are no residual effects. There can be injuries associated with it, but many times it's as a result of you tase somebody and they fall and they might hit themselves. So we try and be really careful about that. But the taser itself has not been shown to leave any lasting effects, and as soon as it's off, it's off. And if you'd like to come down and go through a test, I'd be happy to run you through a test one day.
I want to. I'm fascinated.
I bet there are people that you'd love to run through a taser
test. Totally fascinated with the taser.
It is very interesting, and it's extraordinarily painful, but it's, like I said, as soon as it's off, it's over. It's over. And that's
good alternative than killing somebody.
Well, or even using things like chemical agents such as mace or OC, is that there is a residual effect, and it takes a long time to recover from getting sprayed with a chemical agent because it takes a while for that material to evaporate in it. Even when the fight is over, you still have the burning sensation associated with chemical agents, and not so much with a taser. So we're working hard to equipping all of our officers with tasers so everybody has one.
Well, I think when somebody's coming at you, you use whatever you got, and I don't think you care at that point if you burn their eyes.
Well, we're not really interested in, and you know,
I'm talking about the layman here, the person, you know, the woman behind the desk, you know.
We use pain compliance. We use pain to get people to comply with us, but we're not trying to injure people. And that's one of the things that's nice about taser, is that you can use it and it doesn't cause any injuries. And, you know, last week we had a confrontation with a subject that was having mental health issues, and he was armed with knives and very confrontational. And absent the use of the taser, he might have been shot by the officers, and they probably would have been justified. But they were able to get in a position where they deployed the taser, take him safely into custody, and no one was injured, the mental health subject nor the officers. And no deadly force had to be utilized. So I think it's a great success story about how it can be used properly.
So you have a taser on you now?
No, I don't.
Oh, too bad. I wanted you to use it on Bob so we could watch it. And then we could tell everybody what it looks like when Bob's flopping on the floor doing the funky chicken.
What's interesting about taser is that the Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training recommended a statewide policy. They invited the American Civil Liberties Union to the table to help create the policy. So the policy that we utilize and the training that we utilize was based on input from law enforcement, the taser manufacturer, as well as the ACLU, to make sure that we were doing it properly and making sure we cared for the person before and after and we're using appropriate techniques and so on. So it's pretty unusual to invite that group to the table to help develop a law enforcement policy, but I think it worked successfully.
I think it did, because otherwise you'd be hearing from them anyway.
Right.
So now, going back to Proposition 19 here, before we have to take our break, adamantly opposed to passing it. It's doing business through an initiative that's poorly written that could have a severe impact on our community, is what you believe. And also, each community can write it up differently. So you can go from Shasta County to Tehama County and have completely different laws.
Or even between Redding, Anderson, and Shasta Lake City, because it authorizes local government, which means that, the 400-some cities in California, you might have 400 sets of rules, 400 sets of, enforcement or regulatory practices, and it becomes very burdensome. That's the struggle that we're dealing with right now under Proposition 215, is that, some cities have banned it, some cities are allowing it, trying to work with providing for medical patients and so on. It's very, very cumbersome on local government. And really, if it's going to be done, it probably should be done along the same lines as the way that alcohol is regulated. In that, if you're going to establish a statewide organization, the Bureau of Alcohol Control, statewide rules, statewide enforcement, statewide taxation, that's the proper way to regulate any substance. Our foods are controlled by the Food and Drug Administration. Our prescription medication is controlled by the Food and Drug Administration, and the Department of Agriculture controls our food and so on. That's the right way to do it. Not leave it to each local entity to struggle with these types of issues.
Okay, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, a question from a listener about outsourcing our police work. This is Carl Indebott, Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. Carl Indebott. This portion of the show brought to you by Cypress Square Barbershop. Right off Athens Avenue, Man's Last Stronghold, D.C. Tim and the Man in Black will give you the haircut of your life at a great price. They give that military cut. They shave around your ears. They have animal heads on the wall. What else can you ask for, men, when you go in there? It says Man's Last Stronghold. Okay, our newest addition to our family, Chandler, may not go down there exactly every week, but, he's just waiting to get in there. He's expressing himself after short hair for a long time. Anyway, our guest is Chief Peter Hansen. And one of our other questions, our last question came in, is what about having the Sheriff's Department take over from the City Police Department?
I think, certainly it can be done. There are many cities in California that have contract with the Sheriff's Office to provide law enforcement services. So it can be done. There are many successful models of that in California. Typically, most cities have their own police department, and many cities such as Elk Grove and Citrus Heights and so on have gone the other direction. They've had a contract with the Sheriff's Department in Sacramento County, and they've moved towards establishing their own police department. That has been discussed but not thoroughly researched here. I'm opposed to it, of course, for a couple of reasons, maybe not what you would expect. You have to ask yourself, why do you have a city at all? What makes a city special? And it is because there are certain needs that are unique to a city municipal environment that are different than a county environment. And if you say, let's contract with the county for law enforcement services, then you could extend that argument as well to other services. Why would you have your own fire department? Why would you have your own garbage system? Why would you have your own city council? Why would you have your own city attorney or city manager? And the reason that you do those sort of things is so you have local control. We have a city council because they're more responsive to the needs of the city. We have a city manager because he's directly responsible to the city council. And the city council, through the city manager, is directly responsible for who your chief law enforcement officer is in the city. I'm hired and appointed by the city manager. I'm not an elected official. And the city of Reading, through their city of council, decides who they want to run their city, not the residents of the county. The county elects the sheriff. We are still in the sheriff's department jurisdiction, but it's a local control issue. And do you want decisions being made about how law enforcement is to be done in the city made by someone
that doesn't live in the city?
May not live in the city. But is elected by people throughout the county. And
right.
But there are similar discussions going on throughout the state. And that may or may not be a cost-saving issue, but it really boils down to control and local control over local issues. And if the city council is unhappy with the direction of the police department or the police chief through the city manager, they can make a change.
That's right. I really believe privatization needs to be looked at in many parts of city government. And we've been talking about this for years about not to put people out of work. Of course, we don't want that. But how can we be smart and economize and get the job done and at the same time save money in different departments? But going out and taking away something that you need to control, like you said, may not be the way to do that.
And depends on the profession. Legal services outside the city attorney are extremely expensive. Engineering services outside our city engineers are very expensive, much more expensive. Probably law enforcement, officer for officer, we're more expensive than the sheriff's department would be. The sheriff will probably charge an administrative fee. So there's advantages and disadvantages, but the bottom line is you have to ask yourself is why do we have a city? Why do we have an elected city council? It's for local control. And the needs of the community of Reading are different than the other communities. And the city of Anderson, the city of Shasta Lake, the community of Burney have their own needs.
We have about 2 minutes left before we close the program, and our guest is Chief Peter Hansen. Thank you for being with us. Do you have a closing thoughts for today?
Well, I'd like to say thank you once again for having me on the air. I'm certainly willing to come back anytime, and certainly willing to have you come down and be tased anytime.
Well, and have you opened this up to the city council to have them come down and be tased?
Well, it's, certainly. Is there anyone you had in mind?
Do you have a standing invitation for the city council to come down and get tased, or the city manager? One thing we do want to do, Chief, is we want to set up a regular update, a monthly update, to have you come in and just kind of give us the state of the city as far as the police department is, so that, if there's things that you need to talk about, like, hey, let's get everybody together and let's start reporting gangs, let's work together in the neighborhoods, those kind of things.
Yeah, because different issues come up. Last night we had a homicide in one of our homeless encampments, and very unfortunate circumstance, and, those sorts of things are going to come up, and I can't discuss the case, but there's crime issues that people are concerned about, and I'm very willing to come back anytime that you like to answer questions that come up on the air from our listeners. I think that's great.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again, and thanks for staying on with us, Chief. Tomorrow our guest is going to be Senator Maurice Johannesson, and we're going to be talking about that new Warriors Memorial Building, otherwise could be called a chapel, up there at IGO. Anyway, Carl and Linda Bott here on Free Fire Radio. Just remember, it's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?
You're listening to KCNR, Shasta, Reading.